The drinks are being chilled. That Wagyu beef, Clay, that Wagyu beef is sizzling just nicely. Vinny's shrimp cocktails over in Baltimore are settling nicely. But before we continue our spread, we have to bring in a man who has 54 more interceptions than I do in our NFL careers. A man who is an All-Pro, a six-time Pro Bowler, an absolute legend for the Silver and Black. None other than Eric Allen. Good morning, Eric, on a Victory Monday.
Yes, it is a good morning. And a couple of those, I just have 54 because, you know, I did the right thing at the end of games and knocked the ball down instead of picking them off. So I should maybe, Vince, Vinny, you guys, I should maybe have like 57 or 58.
But you're a team player. And that's why we love you. You're a team guy joining us as he does every Monday. And it is the first Monday. Where it's a Victory Monday, Eric, and the season doesn't start until you first taste that sweet, sweet nectar that is an NFL victory. Take us back. Pick a season, pick a week where you were tasting victory on a Monday. What is that feeling? What is that sensation like this morning?
It's the best. It's a Victory Monday. So if you're not banged up, you're able to kind of kick back at home with the kids, or walk the dog, you're feeling great, you have all your gear on, you know, the house is decorated in the team's colors, and you're excited, you know, the dog is using the bathroom outside, not inside, everything is great. Everything is great on a Victory Monday, and then sometimes when you're older, you come into the facility, like later on, watch a little film, watch those plays that you made, but everyone is smiling, everyone's happy, everyone's encouraged, particularly beginning of the season, because if you go 0-2, it's basically your season is done. I mean, you're fighting and scratching all year long, so it's great to get that early W, especially, and this is what I give AP credit for. So much flack about not going for it last week on fourth down, people questioning, hey, I should have went whatever, and you're going on the road early, West Coast team going east, the Raiders since, I think, And you guys might have more stats than me. I think since 2000, the Raiders were the worst football team going from west to east early. It's always a difficult trip. I give AP credit for finding a way not only to go back and winning, but beating Baltimore in such a dominant team franchise, you know, for the last, you know, 12, 13 years since John Harbaugh's been there.
Yeah, I completely agree, Eric, and thanks for joining us as you do every Monday. Win, lose, or draw, and certainly it's a lot nicer to talk to you when the Raiders are on the winning side. So many places to start. You know, Davante Adams, Gardner Minshew doing his job, getting the job done in the fourth quarter. Obviously, that defense. But I want to start with Brock Bowers because I think Raider Nation and really the NFL and fans across the country are getting a good idea of why this guy was considered one of the greatest tight ends, if not the greatest tight end to play in college football, and certainly somebody that a lot of people thought was going to make an instant impact. Well, he's done exactly that. What are your thoughts on the Raiders' young tight end and the plays that he was making yesterday down the stretch?
Yeah, that's a great point. And let's start off by going back to Raiders personnel drafting him high, 13. People kind of had a question about that. But our GM really did an amazing job of saying, if we can't get the quarterback that we like, let's get an impact player who can affect the quarterback position, who's someone we don't have to worry about who's going to be outside, right, and have to maybe match up with some of the great cornerbacks in this league. Let's get someone who we can move around, which he did an amazing job at Georgia. He can play outside. He can play inside. You can stack him. He can be kind of like that fullback at times and motion them out. So, one, you're going to be able to find mismatches, and two, more importantly, the quarterback is going to be able to target him in the middle of the football field if Davante Adams is taken away by double teams, and he has proven to be such a valuable piece already. When I was in the league way back when, we had a tight end came out of Oklahoma. His name was Keith Jackson, and he was that type of player who was very versatile. You know, he wasn't going to just sit down in that traditional tight end spot with his hand in the ground. He was going to be able to move not as much as Brock, but he's going to spread out wide. He had a fantastic rookie year, I think made the Pro Bowl and was a really huge impact. That's the kind of impact Brock is having. Nine targets, nine receptions. That's very difficult. And most of those catches were contested, too. So just an amazing performance by Brock yesterday in the game.
Well, it was. And I was wanting to ask you, you know, what did you notice or observe from the fourth quarter of what the Ravens secondary was doing? They really kind of allowed the Raiders to start picking apart things, going and throwing vertically.
Yeah. I thought for the first time, basically all year, we saw Gardner being Gardner. The reason why he got the nod because he was able to create outside the pocket and kind of do those things on the run. And there must have been some type of message other than Max Crosby. And I think we've all seen that clip of him kind of going up to him saying, "We got your back." Mm-hmm. Something in the locker room must have changed. Saying, "You know what? We cannot run the football. We're going to get into some formations that allow the rush to only have to deal with four guys rushing." So now Gardner can kind of find lanes, and he did such an amazing job. And the receivers, the big play by Brock, he comes back to the ball. A young guy coming back to the ball 5 yards, incredible. But those two plays, those two catches from Davante Adams, I mean, just peach tape, amazing. Two toes in the ground, you know, elevated, just kind of like that. And then the late hands on the sideline.
Yes.
So we saw Gardner kind of step his game up and make those plays outside the pocket.
We are talking to Raiders legend, Eric Allen. And Eric, you know, you were saying everything's kind of sweeter on a Victory Monday. You did answer the phone a little quicker when we called you this morning. So it, I don't even think it was a full ring. EA was pumped to get on the horn. And I know you're always excited when we talk DBs. You and I had a discussion during preseason about Jakorian Bennett. And while Max Crosby wrecked shop yesterday, he'll get a game ball. Robert Spillane gets probably a game ball for that pick, all his tackles he's done. But Jakorian Bennett's play on that interception, I don't think is being talked about enough. And his play overall early on in the season. What do you think of Agent Zero and him stepping up with those game-changing type plays?
Yeah, I agree. I just think when after the game was over, I usually kind of write down a couple of notes. And obviously the first one on defense was Max Crosby and the great game that he played and how he started off. I went to Robert Spillane. And then immediately you got to notice what JB has been doing the first couple weeks of the season. He's been playing sticky coverage. He's been in the shadow of the receiver, working through the hands, you know, when the ball is in the air, just kind of doing those things that have to come naturally. If you're thinking about those things at cornerback, you're always too late. And that's the one thing that's kind of popped off of screen with me. Those things are starting to become muscle memory for him, and that is incredible, playing on the other side of Jack, who also had two PBUs. But it just seems like JB has really taken that next step. And it's early. It's week two. But every time he's been challenged in a one-on-one situation, he has been there. He has been in that tight coverage. So happy for this young man who has confidence. And that confidence started off during the preseason and even in the training camp, where every time he made a play, his coach, Ricky Manning Jr., and his players were all congratulating him, really getting him confident to be able to be on the other side of Jack and be able to – he's going to be targeted. And we have to know that. And he has made those plays. So I'm really, really happy about JB's progress so far.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I know how much it meant to him. He heard all the talk. Everybody heard all the talk. Yeah. But he came into camp a determined man to get this thing turned around, and he certainly has. Eric, obviously the Raiders had to win by any means necessary yesterday. And like you said, that meant throwing the ball a little bit more or almost exclusively down the stretch. That meant the running game had to be set aside. I know a lot of fans this morning are like, you know, forget the run. Just keep throwing it to Brock Bowers and Davante Adams. Well, that's not sustainable. The Raiders are eventually going to need that running game to be a staple of this offense. So there's no thought about abandoning that as well. But from your vantage point, what do they need to do to get this running game going?
Well, I think first we need to push the brakes just a little bit and look at the two teams we have played thus far. We know what Jim is trying to create in San Diego. You know, when in doubt, it's basically run a toss or a trap, you know, on offense, and then he's going to really physically have his football team ready to stop the run. That's kind of his ID and his MO. Then you go to Baltimore, who's been traditionally a really good defense, and they're going to first stop the run and force you to throw the football. So I think there's some nuance in there in the two teams that we face, but offensive line-wise, we got to be better. I think everybody understands that and knows that. You know, the offensive line, again, for the third year in a row, hasn't had consistency as far as playing together because of injury, because of guys coming, new guys, things like that. So that's going to be a different mentality. And the most important thing, what happened yesterday, is just a change in formation. So instead of going with two tight ends and playing like a power set, which defensively you're going to bring in more bigger physical bodies, what they end up doing was spreading it out. So now the box is light because you're having success at the passing game. So you're going to be able to run the football, but out of a different formation. So we all talked about 12 personnel all offseason. And what that does basically is bring an extra linebacker in for the defense. So maybe with this formation spread a little bit with three receivers opposed to, you know, two receivers, maybe that gives us a lighter box to be able to run in, because you're right. We're not going to be able to just throw the ball and have a two-minute drill for 60 minutes. That's impossible. But maybe with this spread type of look, we can run at a lighter box, force teams into a more of a man-on-man situation where that safety or the extra linebacker has to cover and he has to kind of have an eye on the running game, then an eye on his receiver. I think maybe that's the way to go. And then the teams that we're going to play this next 4 or 5 weeks are not, you know, the Chargers, are not the Harbaugh brothers. So maybe the running game will get a little boost because of that too.
We're talking to our Monday morning cornerback, Raiders legend, Eric Allen. EA, we'll let you go on this one. Nobody picked the silver and black on Sunday in week two. Not one. Literally, not one. You can go through all the pregame shows outside of Las Vegas. Not one. Not a single one. It was all purple. You're going to get a very different talking point narrative in this coming week, the home opener against the Panthers. Take us into the room. You're in the room now. What is the message from the players? We know what AP is going to say, but what is the message as everyone's going to be geeked up to play in front of the Raider Nation, in front of Vegas? It's a team. Everybody has already penciled a W. What is that message that you would be given this week?
I tell you, today is Victory Monday, because players, you need to flush that big, huge win from Baltimore. So you celebrate it on the way back. You wake up this morning, you're happy, you're excited, you're watching TV, you're seeing your highlights. When you walk in the building, it's gone. It's just on to the next football team, and I have confidence that that will work, because AP and his coaching staff have proven once again that he can take a very difficult situation, flip it on his head, get the team to rally around itself when no one thought we were going to win, and be able to have some adversity in the game and pull out an amazing win. So I have very good confidence that this football team, with this leadership, like Max Crosby, will flush it and be ready to play and perform in front of us at Allegiant Stadium. And I'm so excited. It's going to be a party, and I'm going to be there along with you guys, high-fiving, getting ready for this big showdown.
Well, as big as the crowds were with the Nation on the road, I can't wait to see what Allegiant's going to look like this weekend. Eric Allen, our Monday morning cornerback, joining us every Monday. EA, appreciate you. Can't wait to see you this weekend. Thank you, my friend.
Sounds good, guys. Have a good day.
All right, you as well. That is the legend, Eric Allen. And EA's great. Always brings a smile listening, talking to him. But, Vinny, I want to dig deep now. Let's talk offensive line. Let's talk that running game, because in that first half, it was, let's just say, not good. I mean, the Raiders had 4 rushing yards in the first half. 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. That is the fewest since 1995. 43 total yards, the fewest in a half since 2015. Now, when I went back watching the tape, and I'm very excited for Wednesday to talk to Marcus Johnson and Tape Don't Lie and see kind of what he sees. But my goodness, Andrews Pete gets the start at left guard. And it is disaster from the opening play. Poor communication across the offensive line. An immediate sack on Gardner Minshew. He was taken down five times in the game. A lot of it was miscommunication. And again, a lot of it is what we saw in that first half. Just whiffs. Bad plays. There was one point. This is not a joke. This is not me exaggerating. There was one play. Andrews Pete was turned around. He got pushed back so hard that he was shielding, facing Gardner Minshew, trying to prevent a sack. It was all out of sorts. Cody Whitehair comes in the second half and seemed to stabilize a little bit. Again, the running game wasn't that much better. It did look a little better, but there were still obvious issues. I'll be the first one to admit, Vinny, I said the offensive line was going to be good. I was really confident. I liked what I saw. I was wrong. I was simply wrong. It just has not been good enough. Dylan Parham has been fantastic in what I've seen. Colton Miller has had some moments that are very un-Colton Miller-like. The big takeaway in terms of the offensive line, boy, Jackson Powers-Johnson better be ready this Sunday.
Yeah, and that's going to be difficult for him as well. I mean, we've already seen the challenge that Colton Miller is facing after missing as much time as he did, and it goes all the way back to OTAs and most of training camp and all of the preseason, and he's struggling, and this is one of the best left tackles in the game. It's not as easy as it might seem. Just plug Colton Miller in there, and it's all going to be great. Well, it's not been great, and to expect Jackson Powers-Johnson to just seamlessly go in there as he steps foot on an NFL field in an NFL game for the first time, and it's going to all look perfect, and all of a sudden the Raiders' offensive line is going to turn around. I don't think that's realistic either. I think this is going to be something that is going to take a little bit of time for this Raiders' offensive line to really find their footing. It's unfortunate, but it feels like that's how it's going to have to be for at least a little while. I do believe, as the season goes on and Colton Miller and Jackson Powers and this entire five-man unit, you know, the more they play together, the more they stay intact, it's also going to help coming back home where they'll have a home field advantage rather than even in Los Angeles. I know everyone wants to talk about it's a Raider home, but there are a lot of Charger fans too, and the Raiders had to go to silent count in Los Angeles. They obviously had to do that yesterday. So the communication you would expect is going to start to get better now that they're playing at home. I think Eric made a great point. Look at the two defensive fronts that they've played against now these last 2 weeks and what they want to be all about being coached by the Harbaugh brothers. That's a challenge in and of itself. So a tough way to start the season for an offensive line that really didn't get much work together entirely throughout the preparation process. So it's going to take a little bit of time, but it wasn't good at all. You talk about the run game. Obviously, that's not happening. Then you talk about the time that Gardner Minshew didn't have to throw, especially in that first half. I think he threw for 64 yards. They totaled 43 yards. That's because there were some sacks that you have to throw into it as well in terms of the total yards. But he only threw for like 60 yards in that first half. It just wasn't happening. And a lot of that went right to the offensive line. I know fans want to talk about Luke Getsy and the play calling, and you know, you can talk about all that you want, and it plays into it. But when you can't protect up front, when you can't get a push up front, I don't care what plays you're calling, Vince, it's not going to work if you're not executing at the point of attack. And I always use this example. Go watch or you don't have to watch it, but just remember what happened when the Kansas City Chiefs played the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the Super Bowl in 2020. And the Chiefs didn't have either of their starting, you know, tackles. You remember how bad that looked for the Kansas City Chiefs offense in that game? You're talking about Andy Reid, the most creative coach, you know, in the NFL. You're talking about the best quarterback in the NFL. And nothing was working. Why? Because they couldn't protect Patrick Mahomes on a consistent basis, and everything went out the window. So it does all start up front. That's not a cliche to say that. It's the reality of the NFL. And thankfully, it got better as the game went on, and I expect that it's going to get better as the season goes on. But to say that they're not even close to being where they need to be, I think is an understatement.
Well, and it has to get better. I mean, there's no way around it. It has to get better because it's the early part of the season, right? We knew the Raiders were going to hang their hat on their defensive play and what they were going to be able to do. This is a long season. These defensive performances that we've seen in weeks 1 and 2, these Herculean efforts from this group, that's not going to last 17 weeks. You can't expect that 17 weeks. You can't wait for a full half, three quarters to get your offense into gear and expect your defense to keep you into it. These are great stories for right now. And again, it's a victory Monday. I'm not trying to harsh the vibe. But when we, as we look ahead a little bit and you look at what does this team need to clean up, there's a lot. That offensive line, and it's not just one guy. And Andrews Peake, you know, was probably going to be not rated great for his first half. But Colton Miller was tough yesterday. Andre James had a rough day. Thayer Munford gives up a couple bad sacks, just flat out beat on the outside. And again, I completely agree with EA when he says, look at who the Raiders are playing. I mean, those are some good top set front seven defenses. But again, you got to hold up a little better. You can't on the first play have poor communication and pass off the edge rusher to your running back in the shotgun. You just can't. You just can't let that happen.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. But it goes to the heart of what we've been talking about. You just got to figure out a way to win in spite of that right now. That's just the key to everything. You don't think the Kansas City Chiefs feel like they got a lot to clean up? I mean, I felt like that was a bogus, pass interference call. And if that call doesn't happen, the Chiefs are 1-1 and looking for answers, because there's things that they're struggling with right now. Look at the Detroit Lions, you know, the NFC, conference championship game representative. The 49ers are 1-1. You know, there's a lot of teams that have a lot to clean up now, and that's just the nature of the business. Again, you know, it's a shortened training camp. There's less and less practices, it feels like, every single year. There's fewer and fewer days in pads, it feels like, every single year. There's only three preseason games. Realistically, teams just usually use their starters in just two of those. That's probably going to go down when they put an 18th game into the season. My point being is the first month of the season, whether you like it or not, is really a continuation of that development process. And I know that fans want everything to be clicking from day one, but that's unrealistic, not just for the Raiders, but for everyone else in the league. So it's very important to just kind of figure out ways to win by any means necessary in that first month of the season as you're trying to figure yourself out, Vince.
And that's why the beauty of that caller we had last hour, that's why it's refreshing. Good teams find a way to win. And how many years has it been where these are the games where the Raiders came up just short? Good teams find a way to win. They found a way to win on Sunday. We're celebrating a victory Monday. Taking your calls, 702-365-9200.
And by the way, we don't need to figure out where we're going to be on Saturday starting at 5:00. It's the first of the season, the first regular season home game at Allegiant Stadium on Sunday. What does that mean? Well, Raider Nation and Raider Nation Radio gets together, to get together and talk about Raider football and obviously the NFL. This year we're going to be at the Crust and Rue Pizzeria at Town Square, over right across the street from the Rockstar Bar and Grill, where we've been traditionally. The Crust and Rue is at 6825 South Las Vegas Boulevard. It's a modern gourmet pie company rooted in family and memories, with specialty pizzas, pies, dessert pies, pot pies, every kind of pie you could possibly think of, plus Dos Catas tequila, a great bar, TVs galore. We're going to be able to watch the college football games that are on Saturday night, and of course talk about the Raiders and their season opener the next day against the Carolina Panthers. So come join us all over at Crust and Rue Pizzeria at Town Square in Las Vegas, 6825 South Las Vegas Boulevard, Saturday night starting at 5 p.m.
They're into the backfield. They hand off to Zamir. No, Minshew keeps it to the end zone for Adams, and it's caught. Touchdown, Raiders! Minshew pulled it out of White's belly, and a quick throw to Devontae in the back middle of the end zone. And the Raiders, with 3:54 to go in the game, are an extra point away from tying this game.
How about the Raiders?
Devontae Adams, I mean, just peach tape, amazing. Two toes in the ground, you know, elevated, just kind of like that. And then the late hands on the sideline. So we saw Gardner kind of step his game up and make those plays outside the pocket.
Raiders Radio Network with the call, and Eric Allen, Raiders legend, joining us every Monday for Monday Morning Cornerback. We're here on the Morning Tailgate, Vince Sapienza, Vinny Bonsignore, Clay Baker here with you, and we want to hear from you at 702-365-9200. Davante Adams, Brock Bowers, as you pointed out, I mean, what a duo that you can get that kind of production early on in the season. Good things can await this offense.
Yeah, absolutely. And Vinny, I kind of want to go through a sequence in the second half with you and talk about just how impressive when we talk about complementary football is. Okay, so the Raiders are down 3 at the half, right? The Ravens start the ball, and as we saw in week one, the Raiders defense, you know, gave up the most they did on that opening drive of the second half. The Ravens go down, get a touchdown, 6 plays, 70 yards, just like that. It's a 10-point game, and now we're sitting there thinking after what we saw in the first half, like, man, that seems like an insurmountable lead considering what we saw the Raiders offense do, or should I say not do. So what happens at that point? You're down 10 at that point, and you're Antonio Pierce, and to your point, Vinny, you got to find a way to win the game. You could want to be physical. You could want to run the game. You could want to do all this stuff. But at the end of the day, what do you got to do to win the game? You replace Andrews Peay with Cody Whitehair, right? You get Zamir White out of the backfield with a catch and run for a first down. And then Minshew, a play fake to Brock Bowers. The run game was not working. 4 yards in the first half, yet they're still running play action. And guess what, guys? It worked. 25 yards, the first throw of the game, over 15 yards. Now, Mumford gives up a sack, 8 minutes left, they go for it on 4th and 2, shades of week one, you go for it early on the plus side of the field, they throw up one-on-one coverage to Davante Adams, underthrown granted, but it hits Davante in the hands, he drops it, okay? Turnover on downs, you're down 10, you give up a touchdown, you're replacing your offensive line, you're going for it on 4th down, nothing is working. And then Jacorian Bennett makes a play. Robert Splaine gets the pick. Offense back on the field, right? You with me, Vinny? And then This is what happens. This is what you talk about, doing what you have to do to win. They go to the Wildcat. They go to the Wildcat with Ameer Abdullah to try and find some kind of spark in the run game. And guess what? It's a 4-yard gain. It's their longest run of the game to that point. Move along a little faster. Minshew to Bowers. Finally, some magic. That big 27-yard pass down to the one Alexander Mattison, a rushing touchdown. All of a sudden, the Raiders have life. It's a 3-point game. Why do I go through that sequence and that breakdown? Because right when it seemed the Raiders had no shot, it was over. The game was going to be done. The Ravens were going to salt it away. Antonio Pierce continues to go in his bag of tricks, if you will, or just saying, okay, hey, how can we make this work? What do we do here? He's finding ways to win. That is the mark of a true coach, and that is the mark of a good team, finding a way to win when nothing is going your way.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it's without question, they made some necessary adjustments. And, you know, to quote Bill Belichick, and it really does, Vince, sometimes boil down to this, then it's a matter of guys doing their job. You know, we talked about, you know, Gardner Minshew and the performance that he had. It's a guy that was just doing his job when it counted, and that joined the defense, which has been doing its job all season long so far. It might sound like a cliche, Vince, but I know talking to guys in the locker room and to Antonio Pierce yesterday, it is a cliche, but it's the darndest cliche that there is, because there's so much truth in it. The Raiders just needed their guys to start doing their job. They needed Gardner Minshew to do their job. They needed the offensive line to tighten it up and do their job. They needed Luke Getsy to make the adjustments that he did. He did his job. If everyone's doing their job, Vince, good things can happen for this Raiders team. We've talked about it, and we've talked about it, and we've talked about it, how there are 10 wins available for this team. I firmly believe that. But it requires everybody doing their job. It's going to take a collective effort. It's going to take a village to produce wins, the amount of wins that the Raiders are going to need to knock on the door of the playoffs. But it is available to them. And I have to stress this, Vince, and you could poke holes in it all you want if you so choose. That's not been the case for a while here with the Raiders. You couldn't just say, well, if everyone just does their job, everything's going to be fine. Because I don't believe that the talent level was here in certain areas of this football team to just be able to say that. Even if they did their job at the highest level, their highest level wasn't good enough, quite honestly. But I do believe, Vince, that the talent level now, there is a sufficient level of talent, especially when you're talking about that offensive line. We've seen already what Brock Bowers is all about. We know what Devontae Adams is all about. When guys just do their job, good things can happen for this Raiders team. They're good enough to do that.
I agree. I would love to poke some holes in that, Vinny. I would love to tear it apart. I can't. The talent on this team is real. And the defense is what we said it was going to be, Clay. Top 10 touted, top 10 talent, and I would argue it may be much better than that, than top 10, because they're playing lights out. Max Crosby has reached another level in terms of his – he was always a game wrecker, always a game changer. These last two games, specifically this last game, let's just say, he was an absolute force in a game where you knew you had to stop him and you really couldn't, specifically in that first half, and then the collective really kind of came together in that second half. But again, I go through that sequence in that third quarter because we got a lot of calls last week, didn't we, Clay? A lot of calls saying this was same old Raiders. Here we go again. You know, just close. This coulda, woulda, shoulda. And in that third quarter, especially in those first 5 to 6 minutes, there were a ton of reasons why that narrative could have held true again.
Sure.
You could have just been same old stuff.
There were times in the second quarter people were shaking their heads. I was at Barcode, and you're having a party with full of Raider Nation, and people were they were biting their lips as best they could, but even they could not understand the tendencies of six quarters that they were not getting what you wanted.
4 yards rushing in the first half. Four.
Yeah.
You talk about a team and a head coach who talked all summer about establishing identity, running the ball. Simply can't do it. I think it says a lot about this group, and to Vinny's point, the talent on this group, that not only were they able to rise above the adversity, but win in a completely opposite direction of where this team is trying to build towards. They were winning. They were able to find a victory on the road in spite of themselves, in spite of their identity, in spite of everything they have preached. That, to me, is the mark of a good team. Is it week 2? 100%. But this is a win that can carry you for a while, assuming you can drag it over to the next
week.
Yeah,
because you're beating an AFC team that feels like their window open for a Super Bowl is there right now, and you beat them at home. Let's get out there to Raider Nation Radio, 702-365-9200, because we were talking about faith on Friday. We asked for bold predictions. The man who was there, Don from Philly, you
it's
were
Don.
Live.
It's Don!
Thank you for calling in. What's going on, man? You were at that game.
Oh, my God. Let me rephrase this quote. What a day, what a day, what a day. Me and my son get up. We go down 95. We stop, get breakfast. And on the way, my son says, he's looking at his his betting app, and he says, oh, the Raiders, they're giving a 50% boost. So we both bet the Raiders straight up.
Whoa.
We're at the game. There was a lot of Raider fans there. It was it was beautiful. It was unbelievable. When he kicked that field goal, me and my son jumped up, high-fived each other. I says, we're parlaying this to a trip to Vegas next week.
So let's go.
I'll see you guys next week now.
That's amazing. You are not just Don in the 215. You are the Don of the morning tailgate, manifesting Raiders victories. I cannot wait for your prediction on Friday.
The prophet.
For the home opener at Allegiant Stadium. Don, well done. I can only imagine. You and your family put your money where your mouth is, literally,
yes,
with the betting app. I'm curious, though. Take me through your feelings and emotions as Daniel Carlson is lining up there, bleeding the clock, looking to take the lead for the first time in the eventual game winner. Take me through it.
All I kept saying is these announcers on TV are probably saying, oh, he don't miss this and that. I'm saying, please don't jinx us. And I held my breath because at first it was a little wide. You know, it didn't look like it. And then I knew it was good. But I had all the no worries in the world about him kicking us into the win column, like I said.
That was fantastic stuff. Don, thank you so much. Again, great job. Happy Victory Monday. Look forward to hearing you on Friday.
All right. Thank you, fellas.
Thank you, Don. Good call on that. In fact, let's take a break. We're a little over. Vince, Vinny, and Clay coming up next. More of your thoughts here on Raider Nation Radio. It's the Morning Tailgate.
It's the Morning Tailgate, Raider Nation Radio. Vince, Vinny, and Clay. Follow us on X at Vince Sapienza, at Vinny Bonsignor, at Clay Baker Radio. Continue the conversation right here, 702-365-9200. We are continuing to take your calls in the third hour. Excited to have Eric Allen, our Monday morning cornerback, earlier this hour. But, guys, there's a conversation we need to have. And it doesn't involve the Raiders right now. I don't know if you saw this weekend. Vinny, I know you were jet-setting following UNLV, Kansas, seeing that incredible win, heading to Baltimore to get your crab cakes and football. But on Saturday, Tennessee played Kent State. Vinny, real quick, do you know what the score is without looking?
I do not.
Okay. Well, I will tell you. The final score was 71-0. Oof. Okay? Not super surprising still. That's a big number. It was 65-0 at the half.
Tennessee,
like
man.
Sounds like Notre Dame against Purdue.
It was 37-0 after one quarter. Why do we bring this up? Why are we telling you this?
Why
is this important? Well, there's a report out there that at 65-0 at halftime, Tennessee offered Kent State a running clock or a reduction of time in the second half.
That's nice.
Kent State declined.
Good for them.
Now,
we don't need your sympathy. We don't need your pity. We're going to go out there and play football the way it's supposed to be
played.
It's
like they're patting them on the head.
Have you ever heard of? I've never heard of that even being one, an offer, two, an option. Has anyone here heard that at the college level?
I actually have. I don't remember which game it was, but those are sometimes conversations that you have, especially when you're talking about an SEC team against a mid-major program, a lower level mid-major, because what you're thinking about is like it's college football. You don't want to, you don't want to just destroy some kids, whatever, what I'm saying? I would say that college football is the place where there should be a little bit of an allowance for that type of thing, because you don't want to just crush somebody's spirit, that's out there trying to do their best. And it's a different level of football too between Tennessee and that program. And so I totally understand it. I commend the other program for saying no, we're fine, we'll be able to handle it, whatever comes our way. So we're good. I good on Tennessee for extending, that possibility, to try to, show a little bit of grace in that kind of a moment, because obviously you're also talking about injuries. I don't know, Vince, if you've ever been to a high school game where it's two different levels.
Oh yeah.
And you're like, somebody might get hurt out here.
Then somebody does get hurt. Yeah. 100%.
I've done a high school football game of the week where they've had to do that because there was an injury at quarterback and another on defense. And they're like, let's have a running clock for the second half, because let's not hurt anybody.
Well, at least I know here in Nevada, there's a certain number. I believe if it's 33 point difference, it becomes a running clock here. So first things first, on a day where Kent State did no winning, minus 45 yards rushing, Tennessee had 456 yards of rushing offense, 284 yards of passing offense. I mean, the numbers are just absurd. It's video game-like. It's even hard in a video game to get some of these numbers. But, man, what a win for the Golden Flashes to say, nah. we'll line up and we'll keep going.
We're not getting cheated out of this.
I love that.
And I tell you what, Tennessee, now the average is about 42.5 points in the first half throughout the season, and they are rolling teams. This week they're in Oklahoma, Josh Heupel's alma mater.
Ooh.
Right now the game line is 7, Tennessee minus 7 on the road at Oklahoma. These are two ranked teams.
Yeah. Tim Murray, we're going to be talking to him on Thursday about that game, 100%.
Yeah.
But
the way,
go ahead.
Oklahoma fired him as their offensive coordinator. Let's not forget that. So there's a little bit of redemption on the part of Josh, the coach now at Tennessee. He was the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma, and he got fired. So
yeah, and the MVP of their national championship game in 2000.
Yeah,
and let's not make no mistake. As bad as we feel for Kent State, I'm very happy for them in terms of saying no, declining that offer. Yeah, they also got paid a pretty penny to go to Knoxville and take that whooping. So don't forget that school gets paid for those kinds of things. That being said, very quickly, before we hit the third hour, Vinny, how fun was Friday night?
Yeah, that was an amazing night in Kansas City, Kansas, by the way, not Kansas City, Missouri. The soccer field where University of Kansas is temporarily playing half of its game at the soccer stadium in Kansas, Kansas City, Kansas, and the other half of their games over at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, Missouri. So try to figure that all out. About 30 miles away from each other. But for UNLV, you talk about figuring out a way to win a football game, and you talk about abandoning basically the pass and just running it 14 straight times to go beat Kansas, a higher ranked. I think Kansas was favored by 10 points or something along those lines. It was a huge upset for UNLV. Although I think when you're talking about UNLV and you're talking about upsets and you're talking about line scores and all that kind of stuff, I think there's still a little bit of old UNLV that creeps into some people's thought process, because this is not the old UNLV. This is a really good football team, an extremely well-coached football team, and they did something pretty spectacular on that drive that started with about 11 minutes and 55 seconds left in the game in the fourth quarter. Check this out. By the time they scored that touchdown, there was a minute and 50 left or something like along those lines. Basically, 10 minutes came off the clock. And in real time, it was close to a half an hour. That drive was close to a half an hour long. And everything that you can possibly think of happened. There was a fumble that should have been, recovered by Kansas. Somehow UNLV came up with it. UNLV converted two different fourth downs. They went at one point from first and goal at the 1 foot line to first and 10 from the 16 after a personal foul that occurred after the play put him back to the 16-yard line, and they still figured out a way to score that touchdown. So great times for UNLV, a huge win on the road over at Kansas, and it was very loud in that stadium. I was honored to be there. It was an exciting night for the Rebels, and they're in the top 25 for the first time ever. They're 3-0 for the first time since 1984, so hats off to Barry Odom and his crew for doing that. Now they've got a bye week, which comes at the perfect time really for them before welcoming Fresno State. That's going to be a tough game, and then Syracuse a week later.